Kitty Kelly first met photographer Stanley Tredick in 1981. They were close friends for nearly two decades until his passing in 1999. At one point in their friendship, Kelly asked Tredick what he kept inside a Marine Corps locker he used as a coffee table in his study. Winking, Tredick laughed and said, "Nude pictures." Kelly took him at his word. Years later, following his death, Kelly inherited the old locker. She soon found what Stanley had kept safe away inside, a treasure trove of keepsake photos from his days taking pictures of John F. Kennedy and his family. The result is a new book called Capturing Camelot, Stanley Tredick's Iconic Images of the Kennedys, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Kitty Kelly back to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Oh, Joe, it's my pleasure.
A delight to have you back. So give us a sense of what it was like when you discovered what was in the locker and the photos that you inherited.
Well, it was very funny when they delivered the trunk to the front door. My husband said, "What is that?" I said, "Oh, that's Stanley's Marine Corps locker." And I was very sad. I had sat with Stanley when he was dying. And it was quite moving, really, because Stanley, in July of 1999, was dying at the same time his most famous subject was dying. Stanley was the one who took the picture of John Jr. playing under his father's desk in the Oval Office, and it's probably the most iconic picture to come out of the White House in 50 years, and they both died on the same day. Anyway, when the Marine Corps locker was delivered, and John, my husband, said, "What's in there?" I said, "Oh, nude photos." He said, "What?" I said, "Nude photos." He said, "Will you open that right now?" I said, "No, I don't want to remember Stanley that way." So he opened it, and he was very funny. He came back, and he said, "There are no nude photos in there." I said, "Well, what's in it?" He said, "Just a bunch of Kennedy stuff." And I knew that Stanley had been very, very close to the family and everything, and I didn't pay too much attention, but then I looked through it. And, Joe, there were letters from JFK and notes from Jackie and gifts, the PT tie clasp boat thing that they wore. It was just such a sentimental, historical cache of things that last year I thought, gee, this is going to be the 50th anniversary of the Kennedy administration. Maybe I could put together all of those things in Stanley's Marine Corps locker, plus all of the photographs, or many of the photographs, that he had taken of the Kennedys. So that's what this book is. It's really kind of a love letter to history.
Stanley trained as a photographer in the Marine Corps. He served in the Pacific during World War II. He worked, was a cameraman during the Korean War, moved over to UPI, and then it was ultimately in 1960 that he was sent by UPI on the road with John F. Kennedy and basically befriended the candidate.
Yes, you're absolutely right. And it's stunning to realize that in 1960, there were only two photographers that traveled with the candidate, and they were both from the wire services, Associated Press and United Press International. AP kept revolving their photographer, but UPI kept Stanley on the whole time. And Stanley told me that, you know, when they'd hit a town, then the local guys would come in and they would all take pictures, and then Stanley would get back on the presidential plane. So he did become very, very close to Kennedy, and he kept memos from those days. And Stanley was an old-fashioned photojournalist, and he was really as much journalist as he was photographer, because he kept very good records. He recorded things. He kept these wonderful memos, and in one of them he said, he was talking about how it was to photograph John F. Kennedy, and he had great admiration for him, but he was also very realistic. He said, "The guy refuses to pose for anything. He doesn't like anything corny. He will not be photographed wearing any kind of a hat or headdress unless it's a workman's hard hat. He was very proud when workmen supported him. And he would never be photographed combing his hair or eating. So Stanley said to him, listen, Senator, I never want to put you in a bad position, but if you get yourself in one, I'm going to have to photograph it. And Kennedy said, fine, no posing, no corny shots. And Stanley said, you know, Senator, you are going to be presented with an Indian headdress. And this became a running gag, but apparently when they got to Iowa and Kennedy was presented with it, it was on his head for about an eighth of a second, but Stanley got the picture. It appeared on the front pages of newspapers.
But let's face it. There are people who are more photogenic than others, and it seems as though the president would fall in this category of it's very hard to get a bad picture of the guy.
You're right. And do you know, there are over 200 photographs in this book. 70% of them have never been seen before. And there isn't one. I mean, how could you take a bad picture of John F. Kennedy or Jackie or those adorable children? Or even Bobby and Ethel and all of their kids, for that matter. I mean, there are a lot of Kennedy photographs in this book. And even Rose, at the age of 99, is in a bathing suit and swimming. And she looks fabulous.
One of the things that is fascinating about the book is that Kennedy, the president, saw the value of having the president photographed with his family. However, it was Jackie who was very concerned about the privacy of the children, and that really was a balance, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. When Stanley got the picture of John F. Kennedy, president, driving the golf cart across the grounds at Hyannisport, piled with all these Kennedy kids, it sold out Look magazine when it was on the cover, and Kennedy saw that this was a wonderful image, and Stanley wanted exclusive access, and the president wanted good pictures, so they had an absolutely loving relationship going, but they had to fight the First Lady, who really wanted to protect her children, and she didn't want them to be exploited. When she went to Greece in October of 1963, President Kennedy called Stanley and said, the coast is clear. Get over here fast, and we'll do it. And Stanley, for 15 months, had been trying to get an exclusive session with Kennedy for a cover story called The President and His Son. And Stanley went to the White House that evening, and that's when he got the wonderful shot of little John in his pajamas playing under the president's desk. And the president was so excited when he saw the photographs that he showed them to Jackie when she got back. The lead time for the magazine back in those days was 6 weeks, and that magazine was on the plane going to Dallas. Jackie told Stanley afterwards that she was so happy that he and Pierre Salinger and the president had disobeyed her orders to take the pictures, because if Stanley hadn't taken the pictures, she wouldn't have had them, and she said they were her most precious possession.
Kitty Kelly's new book is Capturing Camelot, Stanley Tredick's Iconic Images of the Kennedys. It is published by Thomas Dunn Books, a division of St. Martin's Press. Give us a sense of how, as you mentioned, 70% of these photos have never been seen before. So who owned them, and what did you have to go through to get them published? Was that a giant pain or relatively easy?
Well, it was hard to find the right publisher. Most publishers don't want to have anything to do with photo books because they're expensive, they require permissions, it's just very, very difficult, which is why there are very few publishers that will say yes. But this publisher had a real feel for contemporary American history, and he saw, Thomas Dunn saw the value in these photographs. And it was a wonderful experience trying to curate them. For me, I had to go through probably 30,000 images of just the Kennedys. Now, Stanley had his career is probably 500,000 images, and not just of the Kennedys, but he also worked on movies like All the President's Men and Reds. He did a lot of work with Robert Redford, Dustin Hoffman, Warren Beatty. So going through his archive was quite something. And the estate of Stanley Tredick has a wonderful website set up now at www.stanleytredick.com. That's T-R-E-T as in Tom, I-C-K.com. They don't have 500,000 images there, but they do have thousands and thousands of images that are available to the public. And I thought putting this together on the 50th anniversary of the Kennedy administration would be a way kind of to give back. Because, Joe, this book will not profit the author in any way. Any proceeds are going to the D.C. public libraries. Because I live in Washington, D.C., Stanley Tredick lived in Washington, D.C., and, of course, the Kennedys lived in Washington, D.C. So it seemed a wonderful way to give back. And curating it, you know, going through and choosing the photographs was hard, but it was pleasurable.
So did he own the images? Stanley Tredick owned the images, or did you have to get any family approval?
Stanley owns the images. His estate owns the images, and you have to license from his estate.
And as far as the Kennedy family goes, you didn't have to go through them.
No, no. But I hope that I can't imagine that they wouldn't like this book. And the John F. Kennedy Library in Boston has bought several copies of the book and sells it in their museum shop. So that seemed to be a blessing.
What do you think people learn? I mean, obviously so much has been written about the president, so much has been written about that time, but you know, there is that old adage of a picture tells a thousand words, and I think it's certainly applicable here. You do learn a lot about the family and even about the family dynamic by looking at these
you
pictures.
You do, don't you? You really do. I mean, I think that, you know, John F. Kennedy remains today, in 2012, still the most beloved president. Historians consider Abraham Lincoln the most important president because, despite a bloody civil war, he was able to abolish slavery and keep the Union together. But John F. Kennedy remains the most popular, and I think it's because of his youth, of his glamour, the charisma that he brought, and the feeling of family, in addition, of course, to the dashed promises, the dashed dream. I think Americans really want to love their first family, and there was something about the Kennedys. They were so young, so glamorous. But it wasn't just the elegance of the president and the first lady. It was that feeling of family you got from that great big Irish Catholic tribe that all gathered around their brother and helped elect him the first Irish Catholic president. So it's that feeling of family that comes through in these photographs that is so winning, I think.
One of your early works was Jackie O, O-H, a New York Times bestseller, and an unauthorized biography, which ultimately is what you became famous for, writing about everyone from Jackie O to Frank Sinatra to the Bush family to Oprah. So in doing that type of work, did this help you fill in any blanks, given that you had worked on the subject before?
Yes, it did. I am known for an unauthorized biography, and that's, by definition, writing a biography about someone who's very, very powerful and very much alive and has not given their benediction. I saw a different dimension to John F. Kennedy, to the family, in writing this book. Now, many years had passed since I published Jackie O. That was 1978. And in the passage of time, I really came to a phenomenal respect for Kennedy personally. Now, I know that sounds crazy with all the revelations about his marital infidelity and reckless behavior, but I don't think I ever realized the depth of this man's physical pain. He hid his Addison's disease from everyone except for close members of the family. He suffered so much, botched surgeries on his back, infections caused by that those back operations, ulcerative colitis. I mean, the man was absolutely plagued, and from some of Stanley's diary extracts, you can see he was not allowed to photograph the president when he was on crutches. Most people were led to believe that those were injuries that he suffered when he served in the South Pacific, and he saved his PT boat crew. But they weren't. They were, the man was sickly all of his life. And when you realize this, this is the same man that stepped forward to tell us that we were going to have a new frontier. It was going to be vigorous, and it was going to be youthful. And I just think it must be very, very difficult to live in that kind of continual pain.
There's actually a beautiful image in the book of JFK's rocking chair that was actually prescribed to him to relieve his lower back pain, and it's a very stark image.
It is. You're right. There's also another image. Stanley, as you said, I am known to write an unauthorized biography, which means for the last 30 years, I've spent my time kind of trying to penetrate a public myth that's been put forward. Now, in this book, I'm sort of perpetuating a public myth. But Stanley would submit his photographs to the president, especially when he was looking, not when he was covering for the wire services. He took his pictures, and that was that. But when he was photographing for Look, he would share the contact sheets with the president. He would seek to get Jackie's approval. So when he showed the president the shots that he had done of the exclusive, you know, the president and his son, JFK said to him, "They're all great. Go ahead, every single one except for one." And that's the picture that's in this book of John John playing on the president's chair in the Oval Office.
Yeah.
And the president told Stanley, he said, "You just can't publish that. It looks like I'm not taking the office seriously."
Mm-hmm.
The other thing he would not let Stanley photograph even was Air Force One, because the president felt very, very sensitive about the fact that he was the son of the 14th richest man in America. And he said, "No matter how you photograph this plane, it's going to look like a rich boy's toy."
Yeah. It seems to me that it must be unusual for you to have a book come out where you haven't made people angry.
It's so nice. It's so nice, Joe. I'm used to having the Bush White House denounce me as a garbage thrower and the chairman of the National Republican Party get crazy and Oprah get nuts and President Reagan and
Sinatra.
But gosh, this is wonderful.
You're not mellowing on me, are you, Kitty?
What do you think? Do you think maybe this is a kinder, gentler Kitty?
I don't know. I Now, the next book is The March on Washington, right?
It is. It's a book called Let Freedom Ring, and it came from this book in the sense that, Joe, I spent so much time going through Stanley's archive, and after I put this book together, I saw that there were about 250 images of the March on Washington that had never been published. So I asked the publisher, I said, 2013 is the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington, and that was the crescendo of the civil rights movement in this country. It's just a crime not to, give those photographs to the public. So that is the next book that will be coming out in 2013.
Well, I hope you will join us to talk about that when it comes out. It's always a pleasure to have you on the program. The new book is Capturing Camelot, Stanley Treddick's Iconic Images of the Kennedys, published by Thomas Dunn Books, a division of St. Martin's Press. Kitty Kelly, thank you very much, as always.
Oh, Joe, thank you.
A great pleasure.
Look forward to talking to you next year.
Indeed. Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book, Capturing Camelot, published by Thomas Dunn Books. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.